Psalms 90, verse 13, through Psalms 92, verse 5. Return, O Yahweh, how long?
According to the media and all of the signs that you see in grocery stores and pharmacies and Walmart, we have certainly entered the so-called flu season. Today, I'm going to do a replay of a program that I did regarding vaccinations not too long ago. You can download it at www.hiswordheals.com.
Serpents deliver their poison through the skin, don't they? The enemy is characterized as a serpent. How are vaccinations delivered? In a needle through the skin, just like a serpent's poison that causes death. The Bible clearly tells us what we can and cannot eat as food in Deuteronomy 14 and Leviticus 11. Would these guidelines also not pertain to anything that we put into our body, whatever the method we are entering those things into our body, such as vaccinations? Monkey DNA. How about the DNA from aborted fetal cells? How about toxic chemicals, dangerous allergens, human diploid cells from aborted fetuses? Are these things okay for us to put into our body? We wouldn't eat them. Side effects are not imagined. They are very real. They are so real that in October of 1988, the federal government set up the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, or VICP. Drug company liability for the dangerous side effects of their vaccines was so great it threatened to put them all out of business. So the U.S. government started paying the families for their injuries and losses to prevent the drug companies from discontinuing the manufacture of vaccinations. In spite of strict guidelines as to what the government routinely recognizes as standard but debilitating side effects, the VICP has paid. In 2006, over $1.5 billion had been awarded. As of 2017, that number had risen to $3.5 billion. And that comes from the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program monthly statistics report of 2017 on their own website. I do think it's important for us as Torah believers, Torah observant believers, to understand the truth about what is in vaccines. Is it allowable under Scripture or is it not? First, we'll talk a little bit more in depth about the ingredients in vaccinations, and I'll provide you with some websites where you can do your own research as well. You can find them on my website at www.hiswordheals.com below this archive program link. So I'm going to list the vaccinations that contain the MRC5 cell line, which is derived from the normal lung tissue of a 14-week-old male fetus aborted for psychiatric reasons. The vaccinations that would include this aborted fetal cell line are the chickenpox, the DTaP, the hepatitis A, the hep A and hep B, measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR, rabies, and shingles. And one of the MMR vaccinations from Merck contains a cell line of a WI38. And that cell line, it says, Willstar RA273 strain of live attenuated rubella virus propagated in WI-38 human diploid lung fibroblast. And this comes from the manufacturer's website, Merck & Company Incorporated. I also have a list of actual ingredients in vaccinations here. The DTaP includes aluminum phosphate, ammonium sulfate, cas amino acid, dimethyl beta cyclodextrin, formaldehyde or formalin, glutaraldehyde, and phenoxylant ethanol. The Pentacil DTaP vaccination, the one that includes the cellular protein MRC5 DNA, these are the ingredients: aluminum phosphate, bovine serum albumin, formaldehyde, glutaraldehyde, MRC5 DNA and cellular protein, that would be the aborted fetal cell line, neomycin, polymyxin B sulfate, polysorbate 80, and 2-phenoxynethanol. How about the influenza vaccination ingredients? Here's one by Florix: egg albumin, ovalbumin, egg protein, formaldehyde, formalin, gentamicin, hydrocortisone,
octoxanol, 10, A. tocopherol, hydrogen succinate, polysorbate 80, sodium deoxycholate, sodium phosphate, and thimerosal. Huh, it even contains thimerosal, mercury. Sounds delicious. Would we eat these things? If I mixed it up and put it in a glass, would you drink this? Well, just imagine, it's even worse to inject it through your skin because you're bypassing all of your body's filters that are throughout the digestive system to filter out these toxins. The MMR2 vaccine, which we talked about earlier, amino acid, bovine albumin or serum, chick embryo fibroblast, human serum albumin, gelatin, glutamate, neomycin, phosphate buffers, sorbitol, sucrose, and vitamins. I assume the gelatin here is probably pig. It doesn't say that it is. It says that it has human serum albumin. Do you think we should be eating that or putting it into our body in any form? We go to lengths to avoid marshmallows that have pig gelatin in them. Would we really want to consume these vaccination ingredients? Okay, how about the chickenpox vaccination? Bovine albumin or serum, ethylenediamine, tyrosericetic acid sodium, oh, that's EDTA, gelatin again, monosodium glutamate, MRC5 DNA and cellular protein, again, that's the aborted fetal cell line, neomycin, potassium chloride, potassium phosphate monobasic, sodium phosphate monobasic, and sucrose. Anyway, you get the picture. But the media and those promoting vaccinations would have us to believe that all doctors believe that vaccinations are in the best interest of our children. Is that the case? Actually, there is a website for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons Incorporated, a voice for private physicians since 1943. On their official website in November of 2000, they put out a press release. Doctors' group votes to oppose vaccine mandates. A leading national physician organization is calling for a moratorium on all government-mandated vaccines and has passed a resolution to that end at their annual meeting. We don't hear about these doctors much, do we? I'm going to read their resolution concerning mandatory vaccinations submitted for member approval. Whereas the Statement of Patients' Freedoms adopted by the Assembly at the 47th Annual Meeting of AAPS in 1990 provides that patients have the freedom to refuse medical treatment even if it is recommended by their physician and to be informed about their medical condition, the risks and benefits of treatment, and appropriate alternatives. And whereas there are increasing numbers of mandatory childhood vaccines to which children are often subjected without meaningful informed consent, including information about potential adverse side effects, and whereas parents who exercise their freedom to refuse one or more vaccines may be subjected to penalties ranging from deprivation of the right to enroll their child in school to threats of removing the child from parental custody and forcible vaccination, and whereas safety testing of many vaccines is limited and the data are unavailable for independent scrutiny, so that mass vaccination is equivalent to human experimentation and subject to the Nuremberg Code, which requires voluntary informed consent, and whereas the process of approving and recommending vaccines is tainted with conflicts of interest, be it therefore resolved that AAPS calls for a moratorium on all vaccine mandates and for physicians to insist upon truly informed consent for the use of vaccines. That is their resolution posted on their website to this day. Here is their fact sheet on mandatory vaccines also posted there. AAPS does not oppose vaccines. They are not anti-vaccine group. They are a mainstream association of American physicians and surgeons. AAPS has never taken an anti-vaccine position, they say, although opponents have tried to paint that picture. AAPS has only attempted to halt government or school districts from blanket vaccine mandates that violate parental informed consent. 42 states have mandatory vaccine policies, and I don't know what year this was. I'm sure it's probably more states than that by now, but this is still on their website. And many children are required 22 shots by first grade, probably more now.
According to government statistics, children under the age of 14 are 3 times more likely to suffer adverse effects, including death, following the hepatitis B vaccine than to catch the disease itself. The Centers for Disease Control admits that the reported number of adverse effects of vaccines is probably only 10% of the actual adverse effects. The physician's desk reference cites adverse reactions to the Hep B vaccine in less than 1%. However, if more than 70 million American children receive the vaccine, that means more than 700,000 children are likely to suffer adverse reactions. Children are a very low risk group for hepatitis B. Primary risk factors are dependent on lifestyle, for example, multiple sex partners, drug abuse, or an occupation with exposure to blood. Rampant conflicts of interest in the approval process has been the subject of several congressional hearings, and a recent congressional report concluded that the pharmaceutical industry has indeed exerted undue influence on mandatory vaccine legislation toward its own financial interests. The vaccine approval process has also been contaminated by flawed or incomplete clinical trials, and government officials have chosen to ignore negative results. For example, the CDC was forced to withdraw its recommendation of the rotavirus vaccine within 1 year of approval, yet public documents obtained by AAPS show that the CDC, or Centers for Disease Control, was aware of alarmingly high intersusception rates months before the vaccine was approved and recommended. Mandatory vaccines violate the medical ethic of informed consent. A case could also be made that mandates for vaccines by school districts and legislatures is the de facto practice of medicine without a license. The CDC's own guide to contraindications to childhood vaccinations warns that when assessing children's symptoms, if any one of them is a contraindication, do not vaccinate. And yet, under legislated mandates, the vaccines are still required. This all comes from a doctor's website, a doctor's group website. So not all doctors believe that mandatory vaccinations are a good idea. Okay, now I'm going to read some side effects or adverse reactions that are actually listed on the MMR vaccine website sheet. Here is their list of adverse reactions, and this is what they say. The following adverse reactions are listed in decreasing order of severity without regard to causality within each body system category and have been reported during clinical trials with the use of the marketed vaccine or with use of monovalent or bivalent vaccine containing measles, mumps, or rubella. Okay, the adverse reactions to the body as a whole. Paniculitis, atypical measles, fever, syncope, headache, dizziness, malaise, irritability. Cardiovascular system, vasculitis, digestive system, pancreatitis, diarrhea, vomiting, parotitis, nausea. Endocrine system, diabetes mellitus, hemic and lymphatic system, thrombocytopenia, purpura, regional lymphadenopathy, leukocytosis, the immune system, anaphylaxis and anaphylactoid. Reactions have been reported as well as related pneumonia such as angioneurotic edema, including peripheral or facial edema, and bronchial spasm in individuals with or without allergic history, musculoskeletal system, arthritis, arthralgia, myalgia, arthralgia and or arthritis, chronic arthritis, encephalitis, encephalitis and encephalopathy. There have been reports of subacute sclerosing panencephalitis in children who did not have a history of infection with wild-type measles. Cases of aseptic meningitis have been reported to the VAERS following the MMR vaccination. Pneumonia, pneumonitis, Stevens-Johnson syndrome, erythema multiforme, urticaria, rash, measles-like rash, pruritus. In the special senses systems, the ear, nerve deafness, otitis media, special senses eye, retinitis, optic neuritis, palpulitis, retrobar neuritis, conjunctivitis. In the urological system, epididymitis, orchitis, lots of itises there.
Other, death from various and in some cases unknown causes, have been reported rarely following vaccination with measles, mumps, rubella vaccinations. Okay, so that's quite a list of adverse reactions seen in clinical trials. Okay, regarding thimerosal in vaccinations, specifically we're going to look at an influenza vaccination called Fluzone. I found a website saying an average weighing woman can ingest up to 6 micrograms of mercury per day without exceeding the EPA reference dose. So that would be a full-grown woman. That would be eating it through the normal channels, putting it in your mouth, having it be filtered through your stomach and your intestines and your liver and your kidneys and all of that. 6 micrograms per day for an average woman. The multi-dose vial of Fluzone contains 12.5 micrograms of mercury for a small dose, which would be a child's dose. And then the larger adult dose contains 25 micrograms of mercury. So a woman's not supposed to eat more through the normal channels, not supposed to eat more than 6 micrograms of mercury per day. However, an adult dose of Fluzone contains 25 micrograms of mercury, and a child's dose contains 12.5 micrograms of mercury. And mind you, you're injecting this directly through your skin. It's not going through any of your body's filtration systems. Is that very wise? I don't think so. Adverse reactions listed on the Fluzone insert. Several tables of lists of the different adverse reactions. Fever, headache, malaise, again, myalgia, irritability, appetite loss, drowsiness, abnormal crying, vomiting, that would be in babies, fever. And they go on to note at the bottom of these tables, no deaths were reported in this study. That's interesting that they use that wording. Then further down under table 4 on line 133, it says, within 28 days and 6 months post-vaccination, a serious adverse event was reported by 5 or 0.4% and 20 or 1.4% Fluzone recipients respectively. So these were in second and third graders. Then we have a section on this same document called the following events have been spontaneously reported during the post-approval use of Fluzone. That means after it was approved. These are some of the events that were reported. Blood and lymphatic system disorders, immune system disorders, eye disorders, nervous system disorders, vascular disorders, respiratory, thoracic, and mediastinal disorders, skin and subcutaneous tissue disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, and general disorders and administration site conditions, which included pain in extremities and chest pain. Okay, now let's take a look at the influenza flu vaccine, the live intranasal vaccine. This is from the CDC. It's a vaccine information statement. It says what you need to know about this live intranasal vaccination. Number one, they have a section that says why get vaccinated. And they say flu vaccine can keep you from spreading flu to your family and other people. Is that true? Let's keep reading. Number two, live attenuated flu vaccine, LAIV nasal spray, is section two. There's a sentence that said, it is made from the weakened flu virus and does not cause the flu. Is that true? Let's keep reading. Section 3 of the CDC's document says some people should not get this vaccine. Why not? Well, let me read it to you. Some people should not get LAIV because of age, health conditions, or other reasons. Most of these people should get an injected flu vaccine instead, with all of those things that I just read to you that are contained in the injected vaccination. Your healthcare provider can help you decide. You should not get this live nasal vaccination spray vaccine if you would be visiting or taking care of someone within the next 7 days who requires a protected environment, for example, following a bone marrow transplant. Well, if the flu vaccine keeps you from spreading the flu to your family and other people, and it does not cause the flu, then why are you told not to get this vaccination, this live virus vaccination through a nasal spray? Why are you told not to get this vaccination if you're taking care of someone within the next 7 days who requires a protected environment? Sounds to me like it's possible that this live attenuated virus can actually infect other people. So by getting these live viruses through the nasal spray, are we actually vaccinating only ourselves or our children, or are we vaccinating all those that we come in contact with within the next 7 days, whether they want to be quote-unquote vaccinated or not? Are we possibly spreading this attenuated live virus to others around us? So let's go to section 4 of the same CDC document that says risks of a vaccine reaction. Problems that have been reported following the live attenuated intranasal vaccine. For the flu, children and adolescents 2 to 17 years of age, runny nose, nasal congestion, cough, fever, headache, and muscle aches, wheezing, abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. Adult reactions. Runny nose, nasal congestion, sore throat, cough, chills, tiredness, weakness, and headache. Interesting. Those all sound like symptoms of the flu, but I'm sure it couldn't possibly be the flu because the CDC assures us that this vaccination does not cause the flu. It just causes flu symptoms. Okay. Now let's skip to their insert. The insert for this flu mist quadrivalent, which is a nasal spray flu vaccination through the nasal again. We've got table 5, characterization of shedding with flu mist in specific age groups by frequency, amount, and duration. Shedding, and that's right below shedding studies. Shedding of vaccine viruses within 28 days of vaccination with flu mist was evaluated in one multicenter study, etc. So they studied the shedding of the virus within 28 days, which shedding means spreading, actually. You're sharing this live attenuated virus with those that you come in contact with for up to 28 days. And they have statistics. In the table, it says 6 to 23-month-olds, there were 99 subjects. The percent of shedding was 89%. Age 25 to 59 months, 69% shedded. 5 to 8 years, 50% shedded. 9 to 17 years, 29% shedded. And 18 to 49 years, 20% shedded. So everyone sheds or spreads or shares this live attenuated virus with those that they're in contact with. Hence the warning not to be around those with compromised immune systems. Yet it says it does not cause the flu and you do not spread the flu to your family members if you get this vaccination. But the symptoms of getting this vaccination are flu symptoms. Then we go down further in the same document from the manufacturer that says transmission study. The probability of a young child acquiring vaccine virus following close contact with a single flu mist vaccinee in this daycare setting was 0.58%, with documented transmission of one type B in one placebo subject and possible transmission of type A viruses in 4 placebo subjects. The probability of acquiring a transmitted vaccine virus was estimated to be 2.4% using the Reed-Frost model. So that would be 2.5 people out of every 100 or 5 out of every 200. But yet they say you cannot contract the virus from those who get this vaccination. That's doublespeak. In one area they say, don't worry about it. You can help keep from spreading the flu virus to family members. But in another area they say, don't be around anyone that has a compromised immune system because you might spread the flu vaccine virus. So I've often wondered, when you hear the terminology flu season, is this a natural flu season or a manufactured flu season? I just believe this is information that needs to get out there, especially to Bible believers, Torah believers, who are very health conscious for the most part. Who do we trust? Do we trust our Abba to help our children get through these childhood illnesses alive and stronger on the other side, the way our immune systems were created to work? Or do we trust the manufacturers of these vaccines that are pumping all kinds of stuff into them and injecting it directly into our skin, bypassing all of these natural defenses that our Creator made for us? The more pushback that these vaccines are getting from people, the stronger the pushback from the government agencies that want to push these vaccines and these high vaccination rates California, for example, just rescinded any religious exemption at all in public schools. Yes, I think it's a good idea to homeschool your children as opposed to have them in the public schools anyway. But recently, in my area, our superintendent began asking for religious exemption forms to be signed by homeschoolers. There is no law that requires this, but they're asking for it. What if we sign a religious exemption as home educators? And then what if, like California, they come in and say, oh, no more religious exemptions from vaccinations for school children? Is that going to include those of us that homeschool? If they give you permission to be exempt from a vaccination, is this permission not able to be revoked by the person or the entity that gave you that permission? Should we be asking permission to exempt our children from these vaccinations? Or is it our right? Is it our duty as parents? Thank you for listening today. I ask that you please pass this information along. Again, I'm going to post the website links on my website. These aren't links going to some crazy website conspiracy theorist person. These are coming from the official website. So please check out the links. Again, that's www.hiswordheals.com. Blessings and shalom to everyone in your homes.